I'm sure by now all of you have heard about the Alaska earthquake that occurred yesterday morning at 8:30 Alaskan time. 7.0 on the Richter scale. Many buildings destroyed, some roadways damaged. In fact, at one point they closed down the airport, I think, for about 5 hours just to make sure the runway was inspected. And the epicenter was deep, but it was right under the airport area. And so they had to clear everybody out of the tower, and they were actually controlling flights that had already left from their departure airports to Alaska. They let them land, and the controllers were in a bus or a van, actually making sure all those flights landed safely. So it was a very serious earthquake, a lot of damage. Infrastructure particularly was damaged. Thankfully, at least the reports that I heard last evening, there were no deaths or serious injuries reported, which is the good part. This earthquake was not quite as bad as the one in 1964, 9.2 on that particular quake. And, of course, the damage, I think, reflected that. They learned a lot of lessons, and a lot of the more recent construction, particularly of high-rise buildings, have been like they're trying to do in San Francisco, trying to make it earthquake-friendly, if you will, or reduce the damage that occurs because of the way they are involved in construction. Ironically, I was preparing this sermon about something that occurred in Alaska when I heard the news. When Captain James Cook sailed up the Alaska coast in 1778, he was looking for the Northwest Passage, a long-sought sea route that would allow sailors, which was the main form of transportation then, to sail from the Atlantic to the Pacific without going all the way around the Americas, all the way around to almost the South Pole. And when he sailed to the head of what is now known as the Cook Inlet, he discovered that it split into two arms at the point where the city of Anchorage is now developed. Cook ordered his sailing master, William Bligh. You may remember Captain Bligh of the HMS Bounty, one and the same, to lead an expedition that explored the northern arm. They returned in a couple of weeks to report that it narrowed only to a river. Once again, a disappointing dead end to the search for the Northwest Passage. It was not the opening that he had hoped for. A second party was sent up the arm that lay to the east, only to return to report another dead end. And frustrated, Cook gave the second body of water the name Turnagain. And today it is known as Turnagain Arm. If you've ever been to Alaska, you will, of course, hear that name when you come into Anchorage, either on a boat or a plane. Turnagain Arm is very unique. It is shallow for a bay. It is very shallow. It's 45 miles long. It became a broad, mud, flat, glacial silt river, if you will, or bay. At low tide, it is completely exposed, and you see the earth underneath what would normally be the bay or the water. Eagles love hunting the mud flats that are developed when the low tide is out. They, of course, feed on small fish called hooligans, which get trapped in the shallows and the little wading pools that exist on the mud flats. Turnagain Arm experiences the most dramatic tides in the United States. A high and a low tide differential that can reach 40 feet. And when the tide comes back in, it creates what is called a tidal bore. So I was asked before services today, as I usually am here, what is the title of my sermon? And I said, the title of my sermon is Bore Tide. And I was looked at with questioning belief. What is a bore tide? Well, let me tell you what a boretide is. It is a rare phenomena in which the leading edge of the incoming tide forms a wave or multiple waves against the downstream current that's big enough to surf. And it's not a wave that falls off much behind the leading wave. It's the leading edge of a rapidly rising incoming tide. It's like a wall with the water level behind the leading edge or the leading wave significantly higher than what's in front of it. A leaflet about the boretide describes what happens this way. The tide is held back by the banks of silt mud flats, hesitating until the inexorable force of the incoming tide builds up in height, until finally the sheer weight of it suddenly propels it forward as a single wave. Technically, tidal bores occur on Turnaround Bay every day, but sometimes they're so imperceptible when the tide is very close, the high and the low tide, that you can't tell it. On large tides with a strong east wind, though, the wave at the beginning edge of the bore tide can have the height of 10 feet and can travel at a speed of 10 to 15 miles an hour. Surfers can actually ride a good wave when the bore tide comes in. Harbor seals often ride the tide for miles, playing in the waves. It's tempting at low tide, of course, for people to walk out on the broad mud flats and kind of explore the pools that are there, to watch the eagles feed on the hooligans. But if you're caught out on the flats, when the tide comes in, suffice it to say you're in serious trouble. And it has happened. People have died on these mud flats, ill-prepared for the rush, the sudden rush of water. Tide charts are available at the closest forest stations to allow people to actually go out on the mud flats and to look at the tidal chart and to know when to get off the flats. Because you wouldn't, as I said earlier, want to be out on the flats because the wave is unpredictable. They can't say, well, the next bore tide is going to be 1 foot or 2 feet or 10 feet. So it's very unpredictable. That's why they give you these tidal charts and say, if you want to go out on the mud flat, be very careful and follow the tide chart. Make sure you go out at low tide and make sure you're off the flats before the high tide comes in, because you never know. I think we can all understand that, right? To me, this was a clear spiritual parallel. That's what I'd like to share with you today. We must be aware of the prophetic bore tide that is coming. We must be aware of the prophetic bore tide that is coming. Now, I've got to tell you that I can't take credit for discovering this story. I'm going to give credit to Mr. James Capo, one of our pastors. Mr. Capo pastors our congregations in Arizona, and he also pastors our new congregation in Homer, Alaska. And so he and his son went up there last summer, and they experienced a bore tide. And he told me about the story, and I thought, what a fascinating story. And he has developed a message on this, and he shared it with me, and the notes anyway, and I said, that's a good sermon. I want to give that because I think it's a great parallel. The bore tide got me thinking about how prophecy is going to overtake people and what can happen to those who are just going about their lives like people walking on the mud flats, and before they know it, they can be trying to outrun a tsunami. Stuck in the mud, muck and mire of the world, then completely overtaken in a flood of churning currents of prophetic events that are prophesied primarily in the book of Revelation. Let's begin our journey through this warning, if you will, and see how we can be prepared by going to Luke 21. Luke chapter 21. This is one of three chapters in the Bible called the Olivet Prophecy, because Christ gave this prophecy on the Mount of Olives when he was speaking with his disciples. Luke 21, and I'm going to spend a great deal of time going back and forth through the Olivet prophecies, because one thing that is for sure that Christ emphasized over and over and over again is the suddenness of these events that would occur, how sudden they are. Much like the boar tide that I just told you about. Let's go to Luke 21, verses 5 and 6. Then as some spoke of the temple and how it was adorned with beautiful stones and great donations, he said. Now you can only imagine, and if you've ever been to the city of Jerusalem, you'll know that the Mount of Olives is right next to the old city of Jerusalem and looks down on it. And they have platforms up there that are nicely paved, and they have little walls, retaining walls. And you can look down over the side of the Mount of Olives, which today is covered with graves, thousands of graves, because Jews and Christians have buried their dead there for thousands of years, at least the last couple thousand years. Because they want their relatives and they want to be buried there, because if Christ is returning to the Mount of Olives, they want a front row seat, right? So you look down over the edge of this mountain and all you see is a giant graveyard. Thousands of graves, and then a valley called sometimes the Valley of Jezreel or the Valley of Hinnom. And it goes back up again to the platform of the temple. So you can imagine that Christ is sitting on this Mount of Olives before all the graves are there, of course, and he's looking down this hillside at this beautiful temple platform that has been created by Herod the Great. Herod built it to ingratiate himself to the Jews, to rebuild the temple. Beautiful building. In fact, if you go there today and you walk around the base of the temple platform, you will see large, giant stones the size of Volkswagens and small buses that are still tilted on their side. They've been left there intentionally to show that Christ's prophecy is true. What he said is really true. You can walk around and see these magnificent stones that were hand-carved and made up the platform of what was Herod's temple. Just 46 years prior it had been constructed. And Christ said these words in verse 6. These things which you see, this magnificent temple, the days will come in which not one stone will be left upon another that shall not be thrown down. An impossible thought to these disciples. How in the world could that happen? Look at this magnificent building. Look at the magnificent garrison for the Roman soldiers right next to it. Look at the streets. Look at what Herod built for himself. Herod's temple, or Herod's castle, was right next to the temple. There were all these magnificent buildings which Herod had designed to try to come close to the magnificence of Imperial Rome. It was magnificent. I'm sure they said, well, how in the world can this happen? You know, if you happen to be out on the mud flats at Turnaround Arm at low tide, it's dangerous to think things will always be the way they are then. Right? If you've ever taken your children to the beach and gone out into the tidal pools, played around, you know, and you find the little crustaceans and the little crabs and the shells, and you know how kids play in the surf like that. I've taken my sons out several times and done that. It's one of the reasons we like the coast. We enjoy living on the West Coast. You can sometimes do that. And it becomes a mistake to think that things are always going to be that way, doesn't it? Because all of us know when the high tide comes in, those pools get covered with water. It's the same with turnaround arm and the mud flats. Let's go to verse 7. I'm sure this is what the disciples thought. They thought, well, hey, this building is magnificent. It's going to last thousands of years. It's built on rocks, giant rocks. And so they ask him in verse 7, saying, "Teacher, but when will these things be, and what will be the sign when these things are about to take place?" Basically, if we're using the analogy of the tidal flat and the bore tide, they might say, "Hey, give us the tide chart. Tell us. Give us the tide chart. Because if we're out here in the world and we're on the mud flats, if we can use that comparison, we want to know when the big tsunami is coming. Give us the tidal chart." And he said, "Take heed that you do not be deceived, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am he,' or 'he has chosen me,' as we might say in a vernacular. 'And the time has drawn near, therefore do not go after them.'" Christ did not give them a tidal chart. Not exactly. But he said, these are things that are going to happen you need to watch for. And there were certain things that he explored that we need to be aware of. He basically is saying, okay, things are coming along. You'll see tides come and you'll see tides go, but they're not the big bore yet. Just wait. That's basically what he's saying. Let's read verse 10. He said to them, "Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes in various places, and famines and pestilences, and there will be fearful sights and great signs from heaven." A 7.0 is a big earthquake. And you and I haven't witnessed it personally, but vicariously we have. You've probably seen the pictures on the news. You've seen the damage that was done to some of those buildings. You've seen people running for their lives, ducking under desks and tables. And again, thankfully, no life was apparently lost. But they haven't been able to reach some areas. You know, the highways are down and roadways are down in some areas. The tsunami that was warned, thankfully, did not occur. And they took the warning down, but there could have been a big tsunami and all those coastal villages could have been wiped out. There will be these events. Verse 12. "But before all these things, they will lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and prisons. And you will be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake." None of those men sitting there listening to Christ on that mountaintop had any inkling what would happen to them in the next 50, 60 years. No clue. They thought things are going to continue on as they are. Verse 13, "But it will turn out for you as an occasion for testimony. You will be given an opportunity to speak," which many of them did. "Therefore, settle it in your hearts not to meditate beforehand on what you will answer." Like we heard in the sermon ad, don't be anxious about it. Don't lay awake at night saying, "Oh no, I haven't memorized the Bible. How can I answer for the hope that lies within me?" Verse 15, "For I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which all your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist. You will be betrayed even by parents and brothers, relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death." Again, we see the tides coming over the mudflats and receding. Over the mudflats and receding. But it's not the big one. Not yet. "And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But not a hair on your head will be lost." Spiritually, he's talking about. By your patience, possess your souls. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. He says, aha, the big tsunami is coming. There are signs we can look for. Prophetically, the big tsunami is coming at some point in the future. Verse 21, then let those in Judea flee to the mountains, and let those who are in the midst depart. And let not those who are in the country enter therein. You know, sometimes we read these scriptures, as we have many times, and we think, well, it hasn't happened yet. Many of us have heard these words read to us in congregation sometimes 50 years. And the big tsunami hasn't arrived yet. But the nature of the bore tide teaches us a lesson, doesn't it? It will happen at some point. And the question is, will we be prepared when the obvious signs start to occur, like verses 21 and 22, those in Jerusalem or Judea? Will we recognize it for what it is? Or will we be drawn into such a dullum, if you will, of thinking that we go, well, you know, they've been firing missiles back and forth for decades down there in the Gaza Strip and in southern Israel. It's like ho-hum, just another day's news. It'll fade very quickly in our memories. But I think there's a challenge here, is it not? Then verse 25, we get to more distinct things that will occur. And there will be signs in the sun and the moon and in the stars and on the earth, distress of nations with perplexity. The perplexity comes from the potential that nations can literally be totally destroyed. I know this is not news to any of us, but since the close of World War II, this has been possible, hasn't it, with nuclear weapons? Where whole nations can be destroyed with one weapon. Verse 26, men's hearts failing them from fear and the expectation of those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. The bore tide of prophetic events is coming. The question is, will we be prepared? Will we be expecting it? Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Now when these things begin to happen, look up and lift up your hands, because your redemption draws near. And he spoke to them a parable, the parable of the fig tree and all the trees. When they are ready budding, you see and know for yourselves that summer is now near. So you also, when you see these things happening, know that the kingdom of God is near. Verse 34, but take heed to yourselves. This is what I want us to do in my message today, is not so much, you know, think about what happens in Alaska and go home and begin to, you know, book your next trip up there to see this phenomena. Because it's really interesting. What you can do is, if a big bore tide comes in, you can actually drive down the Seward Highway and you can stop at one of the overlooks and you can watch the tide come in. And as it splashes against the rocks and is maybe 8 or 9 or 10 feet tall as it goes by you, you can watch the surf splash up in your face. You can get in your car and you can drive down to the next overpass, because it only goes at 10 to 15 miles an hour. You can drive to the next overview and stop your car and you can watch it come again. You can keep seeing it come. And oftentimes tourists will do this. So my purpose today is not to inspire you to tour Alaska. It's to help us give heed to ourselves in verse 34 by using this, I believe, very apt analogy. Lest your hearts be weighted down with carousing, the drunkenness and the cares of this life, and that the day comes upon you unexpectedly. That we get so involved playing in the pools of the mudflats that we don't realize there's a danger there that could catch us off guard. For it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the earth and on the face of the whole earth. It'll come as a snare. It'll be a big surprise. Watch, therefore, and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. This is not talking about watching world events. I talked about that before. It's talking about being spiritually prepared, watching spiritually. Scripture is replete with examples of how one day can make a dramatic difference. One day. And how it's possible to just not see it coming, or at least not be ready for its coming. At the end of Turnagain Arm is a little town of Portage. Or at least, it used to be called Portage. What's there now is a small forest of tall, dead trees, along with the remains of one dilapidated cottage. On Good Friday, March 27th, 1964, it was not a very good day for that little town of Portage. Thursday, March 26th, was a day like any other. Everyone in the village was going about their business. No one saw what was coming the next day. But the next day, a 9.2 earthquake struck under Prince William Sound, halfway between Anchorage and Valdez. Another port town, 180 miles to the east by air. At Portage, the ground level dropped 6 to 8 feet, flooding and destroying the entire town. The roots of trees soaked up salt water, killing them and creating today the ghost forest. The earthquake also destroyed many of the harbor town of Seward, 2 hours to the north, or the south rather. In Anchorage, an hour to the west, the ground sank 6 feet or more in several places. On 4th Street, the Denali Theater sunk until the marquee came to rest on the sidewalk. In Port Valdez, trees up to 24 inches in diameter and 100 feet above sea level were broken and splintered into toothpicks from the surge of the wave. A truck parked 32 feet above the water level along the waterfront in Seward was bent around a tree by the surge of the storm, lasting 4 minutes and 38 seconds. The magnitude 9.2 mega thrust earthquake was the most powerful recorded in North American history. It was the second most powerful recorded in world history. Soil liquefaction, fissures, landslides, and other ground failures caused major structural damage in Anchorage. 200 miles to the southwest, some areas near Kodiak were permanently raised by 30 feet. Areas around at the head of Turnaround Arm dropped as much as 8 feet, requiring reconstruction and fill to raise the Seward Highway above the new high tide mark. A 27-foot tsunami destroyed the village of Chenanga. Post-quake tsunamis severely affected other Alaskan communities as well as people and property in British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, and California. It caused damage as far away as Hawaii and Japan. It was serious, to say the least. A lesson was learned. But you know something? There was no warning. There was no warning at all for those poor people who lost their lives. Let's go to Mark 13. Another tsunami is coming, like a boar tide. There will be very little warning unless you're cued in, unless we're thinking that it will come, unless we're expecting it and not drawn into the lethargy of the daily activities that tend to distract us. Mark 13, verse 28. Now learn the parable from the fig tree. We find it repeated here in this Olivet prophecy from Mark. When its branch has already become tender and put forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see these things happening, know that it is near at the doors. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till these things begin to take place. 2,000 years ago, it began to take place. Probably more than our generation, they were looking for the tsunami in their lifetime. But it didn't happen. Tides came and went. Events happened. People died. People were martyred. Notice verse 31. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. One thing we can be sure of, and that is the prophecies of Jesus Christ. Notice verse 32. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Take heed, watch and pray, for you do not know when the time is. Just like that sudden earthquake that happened yesterday morning, just like that great earthquake that happened in 1964, there is no warning. It's like a man going to a far country who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to each his work and commanded the doorkeeper to keep watch. Watch, therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming. In the evening, at midnight, or at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. That's why, brethren, I think we need to be reminded once in a while so that we don't fall into a spiritual sleep and begin to believe that things are just going to continue as they always have been. And I say again to you, watch. Let's go to Matthew 24 now, because we know that that watch means for us to be spiritually aware and on guard and cognizant of the surroundings around us and these many things that Christ prophesied. Matthew 24, verse 37. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Interesting analogy, isn't it? What happened in Noah's day? It took 40 days, but it happened pretty quickly, didn't it? How many people actually believed Noah? You know, oftentimes a minister goes, how effective, you know, am I really? You know, do I really have an effect on people and some of the words that we read in the scripture? Does it really have an effect? Noah was considered to be a very righteous man. We all know that. God even used the term perfect to describe it. He preached for 120 years. I think about this. You know, sometimes I'm often asked, when are you going to retire, Mr. Register? And I don't often know why people ask that question, but anyway, I say, well, as long as I'm well enough to do this and healthy enough, I like doing it. I feel called to it. And it's something that Linda and I, you know, she gave up her career to follow me doing this. So we considered a part of our duty, not only our chosen profession. But I cannot imagine preaching 120 years. Noah preached 120 years. How many converts did he get? Apparently, even a lot of his own family just came along for the ride, if I can use that expression. It's like people slumbering and sleeping on the mud flats, wasn't it? Life was going on. Everything seemed to be just the way it was the day before. Not a whole lot changed. And what happened? Verse 34, "For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be." People thought, oh, it's just another rain out here in the plains of the desert in Shinar. It'll stop in a few hours. It'll stop in a day or two. It surely will stop in a week. But it's getting heavier. You know, I'm sure there were people clamoring to get onto that ark after the door was sealed closed, realizing they'd made a big mistake. But again, it will come suddenly, as Christ is saying here. It will come suddenly, won't it? Let's go down to verse 46. "Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing." That is, spiritually, watching. Spiritually taking heed to himself, as we read in Luke 21. "That when he comes, he will find so doing. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all of his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, 'My master is delaying my coming,' and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and to drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking, at an hour when he's not aware, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Chapter 25 is an interesting chapter. It has three parables. The parable of the 10 virgins, the parable of the talents, and the parable of the shepherd with the sheep and the goats. All of these have strong messages for us. The parable of the 10 virgins is obvious, isn't it? The oil talked about in the lamps is God's Spirit and spiritual growth. Is it not? Talks about having God's Spirit stimulated in our lives and working in our lives. And then the parable of the talents talks about producing fruit, spiritual fruit, with the help of God's Spirit. And the third parable is giving us the lesson to not mistake good deeds for righteousness, and that we should have the nature of God living through us by the power of that Spirit. The parable stirs us to ask whether the very nature of God is becoming natural to us. It illustrates how we are to grow in what Paul called the power of Spirit, love, and a sound mind. There have been a few board-tied moments in biblical history, past and future. Sudden destruction in the days of Noah, as we read about here. And it will happen again, as it says in Matthew 24, verse 37. The people of Jericho, who thought they lived in an impenetrable city, a city that had existed hundreds of years, had the strongest walls of any city in Canaan. After 7 days of Joshua marching around the city, what happened to the city of Jericho? In one day, Belshazzar, the king of Babylon, thought everything was great. He was actually having a big party to celebrate a military victory. And what happened? In one night, Darius the Mede snuck into the city through the sewer system. And in one day, conquered the great city and the empire of Babylon. Let's go to Revelation. Revelation 18, verse 4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people. Get off the mud flats, if you will, lest you share in her sins and lest you receive of her plagues. For her sins have reached heaven and God has remembered her iniquities. Drop down to verse 8. Therefore her plagues will come in one day. The prophetic events of the future will happen relatively sudden. The question is, will we be ready? Her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. Dropping down to verse 17. For in one hour, such great riches come to nothing. Every shipmaster, all who travel by ship, sailors and as many as trade on the sea, stopped at a distance and cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what is like the great city? How did this happen in such a short period of time? We see hints of things going on prophetically in our own country. In this year, we've had the worst hurricane we've ever had, the worst fires in California, and now second worst earthquake ever on U.S. soil. I mean, what's happening to America? We may say, well, the same old, same old. Is it just a little tide? We should never assume that, should we? Verse 19, they threw dust on their heads and they cried out, weeping and wailing and saying, alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea became rich by her wealth, for in one hour she's made desolate. The boar tide of prophetic events is coming. And the question is, will we be ready? How can we avoid getting caught up in the boar tide of fulfilled prophecy? We can see it coming, can't we? I can. The time of Jacob's trouble and the inevitable great tribulation, natural and man-made and God-caused disasters are coming. What can we do? I'd like to leave you with the three points illustrated by the three parables of Matthew 25. Number one is watch your oil. God's Spirit. Make sure your vessel is full. Spiritual disciplines, never neglect them, never allow modern technology to crowd them out. Prayer, Bible study, regular fasting. Watch your oil, God's Spirit, and make sure your vessel is full. Number two, be about the business of multiplying our talents. Actively growing spiritually with the help of God's Spirit. Are we overcoming? Are we growing spiritually? Or is it, oh well, it's another day. Nothing dramatic is going to happen. It's the same old, same old. So we should be about our business of multiplying our talents with God's help. And number three, we should love God. Love our neighbors and love the brethren. But watch to make sure that that love is for God and of God, dwelling richly and actively in our lives. The action part. So watch your oil, be about the business of multiplying your spiritual talents, and love as God loves. So brethren, if we can watch these things, We will never be victims of the prophetic war tide that is coming. It is coming.